Hi, it's Todd Feinberg. Welcome to After Six. I love this topic. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do, because someday, whether it's 5 years or 25 years from now, we will all be boogieing around, driving at probably moderate speeds wherever we want to go, and we can have our eyes shut, be taking a nap, or playing video games, because autonomous vehicles are coming. To talk to us about some of the problems, like why is it going to take a long time or not, and what are the challenges, we turn to an attorney, Quentin Brogdon from Crane Lewis Brogdon. His website is cranelewis.com. Quentin, thanks for joining us on WTIC.
Good morning, Todd. Thanks for having me on.
So tell us about this challenge. I know they've got a technological challenge. How do you make these things work? But there's going to be a period of time where there's a transition where we go from Google having somebody sitting behind the wheel monitoring every car as it drives millions of miles around the country, and then eventually we'll be home free. What are the challenges from a legal point of view and a liability point of view from getting for us to get there?
Well, Todd, the automation of our vehicles has been going on a lot longer than most of us realize. We had autopilot, you know, the so-called autopilot, which was really just cruise control in the 50s. Then we had anti-lock brakes in the 70s, electronic stability control in the 90s. And then more recently, we've had these driver assist programs that will parallel park a vehicle and apply brakes if the system senses you're getting too close to the vehicle in front of you. But in the last 5 to 7 years, it has taken off with a vengeance. And so-called AVs, autonomous vehicles, they're not just coming, they're here. And they've started getting involved in high-profile crashes. An Uber killed a woman walking across its path. There was a human attendant there, a backup driver, but the backup driver wasn't paying attention, and the car killed that woman.
But was that an Uber? That was in Texas, right?
That was in Arizona.
Arizona.
Actually.
Was that a test vehicle there? Uber isn't actually delivering people from customers from point A to point B in these, are they?
No, Uber is not. It's a test vehicle. And Arizona has been one of the most open and free states about encouraging these test vehicles. In fact, Uber was running big 18-wheeler rigs, autonomous across the full length of the state. They had a backup driver, but they would be loaded into these Uber trucks and taken all the way across the state of Arizona and driving on these AV, autonomous vehicle systems.
That's now, can you explain the truck thing? Because if you can't get a car to work autonomously, why would you even go near a big rig?
You're right. And what happens is these autonomous systems, these AV systems, they don't always see well and they don't always think well. They have a number of different sensors. A lot of people think they operate just based on GPS, but GPS is only accurate within a few feet. So they have to be supplemented with radar, light, so-called LIDAR, light sensors. So they have to have all these systems and sensors. And what could possibly go wrong when you have a sophisticated system where all these sensors have to talk to each other and be controlled with software? The answer is lots can go wrong.
Yeah, so a big part of this is programming and trying to make these systems integrate, as you allude to.
Yes, they're programmed to make certain assumptions about their environment and the actions of other drivers. And crashes have happened, for instance, when the systems have assumed that all the other drivers will obey the traffic laws. What could be wrong with that assumption? Likewise, they've sometimes assumed that stationary objects were permanently stationary and they wouldn't soon become a moving object. A Tesla drove up under an 18-wheeler trailer that was across its path because the Tesla basically tuned out the trailer. It assumed it was a bridge overhead.
That was because of light reflection that confused it or something like that?
Yes, and also the programming. So, you know, bad weather causes the LIDAR waves to sometimes reflect off of that, the raindrops, for instance, the particles in the air, instead of reflecting off of obstacles such as pedestrians or bicyclists.
Okay, but to be fair on this, if we're talking about a big rig going across the state of Arizona, I assume that the driver who's in the vehicle for safety's sake is driving the truck onto the highway, and then the challenge for the truck is a much simpler one. It's simply maintaining its lane and being aware of merging cars. And in the Tesla accident, That was using a driver assist system where the driver was being negligent. He took his eyes off the road and was playing a video game, and he wasn't supposed to be doing that. No one was claiming that to be autonomous technology, correct?
Well, you raised some interesting points. We're in the most dangerous phase now because we're in a transition from vehicles that are, you know, our grandfather's vehicle and grandmother's vehicle into fully autonomous. And we're in what many refer to as a partially autonomous phase. The problem is drivers still have responsibilities to maintain alertness and to perhaps seize control of the vehicle in certain circumstances. But some of the marketing, for instance, Tesla's been criticized because some of the marketing of the Teslas at least implies that you can just let the car drive itself. There are other inconsistencies, you know, that say, no, it's beeping at you, and don't, you know, put your hands back on the wheel when it beeps at you. It doesn't always beep at you when it should, and anybody who's dealt with medical malpractice cases, as I have, you walk into a hospital or visited a loved one in the hospital, you hear the alarms beeping at the nurses, and the nurses and doctors oftentimes are ignoring them because there's so many alarms beeping so continuously. So all those are dangers, and it's an open question whether the designers of these systems are up to the challenge of making them safe for use by humans.
But these are natural growing pains, and there's a little bit of a tone to you since you're an attorney. Quentin Brogdon is our guest. Since you're an attorney, I feel like you're suggesting that this is foolhardy to be operating these vehicles and to think that there isn't going to be huge liability on the part of the companies doing this. Is that your position, that they shouldn't be doing it maybe? It's negligent?
No, not at all. All I'm saying is we just need to go into this with open eyes. And there are ethical questions that are raised. For instance, we know some people are going to die during the testing of these AVs who would not otherwise die as the system and as the systems are perfected and the bugs are ironed out, so to speak. But, and the idea is that in the long term, more human lives will be saved. We know that over 90% of crashes are caused by human error. So the theory is, and I think it's more than a theory, I think it's legitimate, that as the systems are perfected and human error is taken more and more out of the system, then we will start to reap the benefits. All I'm saying is we are in a dangerous phase now where some, at least, I think have prematurely embraced this as the answer to all safety questions. And all I'm doing is raising a concern that there are some new safety concerns raised by the, some would argue, premature adoption and premature lauding of this technology.
Yeah, well, it is easy to get excited. Get excited in advance. It's an easy thing to do because it's a fantastical world to consider, that you'd be able to sit in a living room, essentially, that's inside a moving vehicle and get more safely from point A to point B than you ever have before. And I anticipate that's going to be the situation. I'm more concerned with other issues. For example, are we all going to have to sit in cars that are going the speed limit or maybe under the speed limit? And are we going to have to stop at stop signs as opposed to just riding through? I mean, that scares the hell out of me to have to stop at every stop sign and come to a full stop. And then in one of your communications, one of your emails, you talked about a situation that I think is fascinating. When a child chases a ball into the street, will the autonomous vehicle be programmed to swerve, putting the passengers at risk, or will it be programmed to put priority on the safety of the people in the vehicle and run over the kid? And how do you deal with issues like that?
Well, I mean, needless to say, as we're driving down the road, we're placing a priority on our own safety. And when we, you know, narrowly steer clear of a wreck or something, potentially we're placing others in danger, but our instincts often take over and our will for self-preservation. That is an ethical issue as far as programming. If you, as the computer, are trying to save the occupants of the vehicle's lives by potentially placing bystanders, or in that example, the child bouncing the ball in the street in front of the car, at danger, should you do that? Now, I, for one, if I'm riding in an autonomous vehicle, I don't want to take one for the team. I want my vehicle placing my safety, you know, the priority on that. But that's a question that developers of these systems have wrestled with. Mercedes, as you said, recently decided they're going to program the AV, the autonomous vehicle, to place a premium on the safety of the occupants of the vehicle.
I guess to sell the cars, that's what you have to say. But if it were up to me, I'd throw the switch. I'd say save the kid. But what the truth of an autonomous vehicle is, I believe, is that in an average situation in which either the driver or the kid would die or get or potentially die, that in the autonomous vehicle has so much more complexity. It can make instantaneous decisions about what route can be taken, what the forces are that will be placed on the car, and what it can handle. And it'll be able to instantly track a safe route to make everybody safe. So I think we're all going to be so much better off. Not only that, it can send signals to other cars to stop or swerve as well, and I assume construct a complex life-saving a plan for everybody.
Potentially, that's absolutely true. Again, all I'm saying is we're in a phase now where, as we transition to that panacea one day, where we're there, where the systems are perfected and errors are few, if at all, in the systems, we're going to have hiccups and crashes and deaths and injuries along the way. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I just want to, I just heard a little of that zealous attorney there, and I wanted to put a check on it. There is another area of concern as well, and that is that as we move into this world, there's going to be a transition period, as you've alluded to. But what that transition period consists of is sort of complicated, because the panacea I just talked about is when all of the computers, all of the cars are coordinating with each other. They know where everybody is, and also where everybody is going and is intended to be going. So presumably the car coming up the street will someday know that I'm going to be taking a right because it can share GPS information. But what do we do in the meantime when there are some humans driving cars and some autonomous vehicles and the technology isn't that sharp?
Well, it's going to place some strains and stresses on our existing legal framework, our so-called tort system. Torts are just injuries caused by the wrongful conduct of others. And also our insurance system. You know, insurance companies are having emergency meetings, basically trying to think tank and plan out how quickly will these AVs, autonomous vehicles, be adopted, just how many fewer crashes will occur, and what will those crashes, the cost of crashes, do in the future? Will the crash costs go down? There'll be so many fewer. Will profits for insurance companies go down?
Well, of course they will, right? The insurance companies are trying to figure out how to stay in business. They want to put bugs inside those programs to make sure there are still occasional accidents.
Some might argue that they're certainly looking at their own profit. That tends to be what motivates insurance companies more than anything else, in my experience, the bottom line. So, absolutely, traditionally, if you and I were in a car wreck, we would have a lawsuit in state court, and if I was the one who caused it, you would sue me, and then my automobile insurance would hire an attorney and pay the damages if you prevailed in the lawsuit. Now, potentially in the future, there's the potential for any garden variety crash to become an expensive, time-consuming products liability case, where you have just not just the operator, maybe you should have taken control of the controls at some point and didn't, maybe arguably, but the manufacturer of the vehicle and the component parts, the developer of the software, you know, with experts, and it could be a big time-consuming case, and it could end up, for a number of reasons we don't have to get into, in federal court, a more complex, time-consuming court than in state court, where most car crashes have ended up in the past years.
So what's your prediction? If the question I get when we discuss this on the air, the idea of autonomous vehicles, Quentin, what people usually ask is, well, who's in trouble if your car crashes? They're wondering that if nobody's behind the wheel, how do you blame somebody for the accident? And my first thought is, well, it's the owner operator of the vehicle in terms of the registration would be liable. But then I think, no, it's, since there is no operator per se other than the technology sold by the car manufacturer, well, then that's who is responsible for the accident. But then there may be some other kind of world here. And this, now I'm going off the deep end a little bit, but maybe not. You tell me, Quentin. Are we entering a world in which this becomes sort of a one world system where there's, we lose the sense of our individual privacy, and all of it, the information is shared, and we're all working together when we're driving because our computers are talking to each other, and is the liability handled by some big federal system, which you allude to, that integrates all this and deals with the interstate commerce aspects of autonomous vehicles?
Well, you get to an important point. There's been a raging debate about whether the existing regime, the tort system that now allocates, you know, payments for damages, can adapt to this new reality. The Brookings Institution, for instance, says the regime has adapted to the automobile, to when it first arrived, airplanes, new technologies. The existing regime has been remarkably adaptive. Rand, on the other hand, says that this is such a new and different beast, if you will, that Congress should consider stepping in, for instance, and preempting, meaning passing laws that eliminate the state laws that heretofore have controlled most car wrecks, and passing basically one regime, maybe even a no-fault regime, where it's, the concern isn't about who is to blame so much as everyone pays into this fund, and if you're injured in a crash, then you're paid out of that fund. And there are some states that experimented with no fault in the 70s in particular, and it was not a very successful experiment, by the way. We won't get into all the whys and wherefores, but those are the kinds of issues that are being debated in law journals and in articles and amongst lawyers right now.
Well, so now you're making me nervous. Now I'm thinking that what we're heading to is a worst-case scenario, that the modern world makes the American system of government, which is being aggressively abandoned anyway, but I'm somebody who's fighting to maintain some of those values that the founders had in mind. I think that's the best system of government, but how do you maintain a federalist system if there's these huge integrated systems for something as simple as driving to the store?
I'm in agreement with you to the extent that, you know, our right to trial by jury, for instance, is enshrined in our, you know, United States Constitution and in the Constitution essentially of every state individually. And one of the things that some of these so-called remedies, such as, you know, what Rand has proposed, trample on, would be the right to trial by jury. Right now, if I'm in a car wreck and I don't agree with an insurance company's evaluation of my injuries and damages, I can go before a jury and make my case, and the jury may believe me or not, but I have that right. And to lose that right, you know, as part of the rollout of autonomous vehicles, I think would be, and many believe, would be too high a price. So
yeah, but if I had no liability, what difference would it make? Like, what would I get tried for if somebody else is running the car?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily be you. You know, there are two issues in an automobile case. Usually one is liability, who caused the wreck, and the other is damages. It's not simply a matter of, well, we know that you, Todd, were injured, and now the question is what, you know, here's some money, and everyone agrees what that amount is. You may have an injury that you believe is of one nature, but the insurance company may say, well, no, Todd had back problems before.
Okay.
Todd may know and believe he has a new injury.
So that world doesn't go away.
Well, it potentially could with no-fault insurance, where you don't necessarily have a right to a trial by jury to present even your damages to a jury necessarily in a no-fault regime. That's the concern.
All right. This is fascinating stuff. Quentin Brogdon, we love having this conversation, and I appreciate you taking the time. Your website is cranelewis.com if people want to learn more. CRAINLewis.com. Thanks so much for your time. It's been great talking with you.
Thanks, Todd. We'll be watching this eagerly, and we're all, you know, lots of predictions. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, check back in when something big happens.
All right, Todd. Thank you. Have a good day.
That's it for this half hour of After Six. But don't fret, there's more coming up after news. We'll be talking to Mark Fitch from the Yankee Institute. Visit yankeeinstitute.org. See all the wonderful things they're working on, trying to save our state from the destruction that it's facing right now. And we'll do that right after news. So stay with us on WTIC News Talk 1080.